Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
Don't buy the house that you want, buy the house that you need. And the house that you need is a multifamily property. If anybody comes out the gate and buy a single family home, you know, house on the hill, white picket fence, you're not thinking like an investor. And my purpose is to teach you, don't think lifestyle, let the investment create the lifestyle. And they talk about passive income. Nothing is passive until you get active. So if you can't get active and get activated, you're not really getting no passive income. You're playing with it because it's going to stop. You got to get active, and active means that you got to learn. You got to get in the field. You got to build your business. See, real estate is based on a foundation. I always say this, money grows on trees when you plant seeds. If you're not planting seeds, that means you're not building your foundation. And eventually a weak foundation crumbles.
Hey, business owners, what if I helped you get access to $50,000 in business funding for $1 a day? Would you be interested? Well, inside of my Credit Mastery community, you're going to be getting exclusive access to our in-depth training program that's worth tens of thousands of dollars to give you the exact strategies you need on how to restore your credit and on how to properly structure your business. You're also going to be getting access to a financial consultant with over a decade of experience in the funding space that'll help you reach your financial goals in half the time it would take if you were to do it on your own. And we're going to be giving you 2 coaching calls every week that'll give you the exact banks you need to go to get access to $50,000 to $100,000 in business funding. This is the same community that helped Pat get access to $50,000 in funding from Chase, helped Alvin get access to $8,000 in funding from Amex, helped Matt boost his personal credit score by 150 points, and helped Donna delete a bankruptcy from her credit report. So if you're interested, click the link above or below this video to join now, and we'll see you on the other side of success. Let's go, family.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today, is a very special day because our guest today is a father, husband, entrepreneur, investor, speaker, mentor, and real estate expert extraordinaire. He's the creator of the Cashflow Roadmap Community, a program designed to help everyday people print money on demand by mastering the game of real estate and leveraging OPM through accessing business credit. Whether he's mentoring leaders on how to build acquisition systems for purchasing their first real estate property or teaching working professionals how to fire their boss by hitting their minimum cash flow goal, our guest's mission remains the same: to make financial independence through real estate not just accessible, but inevitable. And today, he's here to do more of the same. Ladies and gentlemen, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, I'm here with the one, the only, my guy, Mr. Calvin Cannon Jr. What's going on, family? How are you?
Oh, man. Marv, that intro was crazy.
Hey, man, listen, I appreciate that.
Of course, man. You deserve it, brother.
Yes, I appreciate it. Thank you, man. Thank you for having me, man. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Man, it's appreciate you. It's been a long time coming. I keep my eyes peeled for individuals that are just prominent in whatever field that they're in, and I've known about you for some time. Mm-hmm. And my audience loves any and all things real estate. Right, and you and I had a very fruitful conversation off camera.
Yep.
I know it's going to be even more fruitful on camera, and I'm just excited to get the game to the people.
Man, let's do it. Let's get to it.
100%, man. So once again, happy to have you. Obviously, I know who you are, but some people who are watching may not. So for those who are unfamiliar, who is Calvin Cannon Jr.?
Oh, man. So my name is Calvin Cannon Jr. Born and raised in Philadelphia. I have been in real estate for the last 33 plus years and counting. My goal is to make sure that I'm in giving the people the right information about real estate. I am not a real estate influencer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am somebody who is in real estate, right? Real estate leaves residue. And, you know, as we talked before, a lot of people's hands are clean. So some people do intellectual property real estate. I do real estate.
Dive a little bit more into that, because we talked a little bit about that off camera. What is intellectual property real estate?
Yeah. So, you know, if everybody remember, you know, COVID was some time ago and everybody was inside,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything was done online. You know, you have courses, you have programs. But then once COVID stopped, everybody came outside.
Mm-hmm.
But what people forgot is that before we went inside, people was really doing real estate.
Yeah.
Right. Then they got the social media bug.
Mm.
And that social media bug is, you know what? I don't have to come back outside anymore. I can just sell courses. I can sell programs. I can sell intellectual property real estate. Like if you do an ebook, that's actually real estate. But it's an intellectual property of real estate.
Yeah.
Me, you know, not to say I didn't have any ebooks, but I'm more comfortable with being inside of the building, hands on. You know, real estate is a hands on business. And if you're really doing real estate, your hands are going to get dirty.
I love it. Let's take a couple steps back because you've been in this game for a very long time.
Yes.
Very seasoned, very long time. But obviously, it took a couple steps for you to get here. If we go back a bit in reading into your story, If I remember correctly, you had a mother who she worked in corporate America, 9-to-5 lifestyle.
Yep.
Literally, she worked for Colonial Penn.
Yep, life insurance, yeah.
And then you had a father who was an entrepreneur in the nightlife space.
Yes,
very so nightlife. That's a very interesting duality because it's like, for them, of course, but more so for you because from a young age, you got to see the best of both worlds of what life looked like working the 9-to-5, you know, rigid, structured day-to-day life and the ups and downs of not just entrepreneurship, but being entrepreneur in nightlife, that's its own, you know,
absolutely,
whirlwind in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
What did life for you look like at that point?
So my household was very, very strict. You know, my mom did not appreciate my dad owning bars and owning clubs. So when I wanted to tap into that style of life, my mom declined it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my mom and dad bumped heads a little bit. I'm the youngest and I was the youngest son. So for me, it was strict. You know, I went to Catholic school. We didn't have a lot of things that a lot of other people have. Like I didn't have a golden spoon. You know, I didn't even have a silver spoon. My mom worked, you know, 2 to 3 jobs to help support us. My dad did the best that he could. Back then, you know, in the 70s, the nightclubs weren't making the money that they're making today.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we did what we had to do to hustle and grind. But I really wanted to be an entrepreneur. But I really wanted to get this out my parents' house because the rules were strict. You know, I had to be in the house when the light came on. That was probably like 7:30, 8:00.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had other friends that was outside doing what they wanted to do, but I couldn't do those things.
Yeah.
So I put all my focus into school. I played sports a lot to try to stay out the house. Went to college, you know, to try to stay out the house. And then eventually I stumbled across my first property and it really took me out of the house. So that was pretty good. We kind of crossed barriers a little bit because mom didn't like the nightlife and dad couldn't stay out of the nightlife.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that kind of put me in the middle of I want to do it, but I can't do it. And even me and my father bumped heads because I wanted to learn the bar business. I wanted to learn the club business and he denied me. He denied me. He got into some financial troubles, not managing the stuff right. And eventually I had to save the business.
Really?
Yes. Save the business as much as I could. And then my father, you know, my mom and dad eventually they split, cause my mom couldn't take it. She gave him an ultimatum, either the nightlife or your family.
Mm.
He chose the nightlife.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's deep, man. It's deep.
Goodness gracious. So. Yeah. You're born into a family where, once again, you have the best of both worlds. Mom's in the 9-to-5 career-based space.
Yep.
Dad is a entrepreneur in the nightlife space.
Yep.
Your mom gives your father an ultimatum. It's like, listen, it's either us or nightlife.
Yep.
And your dad is basically like, hey, deuces. I gotta go, run this business.
Yep.
Okay, so you wanted to get into the business. Did that give you any pushback towards your dad at all? Did you understand? Because I'm sure, you know, you were young at the time. Like, what happens at that moment?
Yeah, so, you know, my dad left and then I did resent him for that. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like how could the nightlife be better than just being with your family?
Yeah.
But I was young then. But, you know, what I had to understand is that without that nightlife, you know, our mortgage wouldn't have been paid.
Yeah.
You know, the lights would have been out. You know what I mean? We wouldn't have been able to live in the neighborhood that we lived in.
Yeah.
So at a younger age, I didn't respect it. But as I got older, started having children of my own, then I started to understand, yo, my dad really did what he felt was best.
Mm-hmm.
Always stayed in contact. You know, I was able to reach out to him. I was able to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
He just wasn't in the house anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was tough on that aspect. But as a young kid, you don't really see it until you see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Until you have your own children and understand it. So it definitely gave me some spark to go harder.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got my first property, you know, I kind of looked at my dad and I'm just like, you know, now let me show you that I do know how to do business.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I wanted to help you, you denied me.
Mm-hmm.
So now my goal was to outdo him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did.
Every son, I feel every son that I know that has a father's entrepreneur comes into business. If they become an entrepreneur with that chip on their shoulder, like,
yes,
like, I respect you as a man, but I'm gonna cook you. Like, I'm coming for you. I had the same thing with my dad too, where it's like my dad had a background in contracting and construction.
Yep.
I never really fancied that, but when I got into financial space, because we kind of bumped heads when I did work with him, I'm like, all right, now I'm gonna show you how I'm gonna do it my way, and I'm gonna show you we can be successful this way, and you know, the rest is history. But I definitely can relate with that.
Yeah.
So now move forward.
Yep.
You said you talked about wanting to get out your parents' house.
Yep.
You go to college. Yep. Around that time, you get your first property. If I'm not mistaken, you attended Temple University.
Yes, yes. TU.
Understand? So this is 1991.
Yes.
And you get a lump sum of money that comes into your hand that you're ultimately able to use to buy this first property. Talk a little bit about that story.
Yeah. So it's incredible. So, you know, I was still a knucklehead kid in 91 and went to Temple University, and I didn't do my paperwork for grants properly. You know, I thought I knew everything. I filled it out. The stipend for my books and room and board came 2 to 3 weeks after the semester ended. Mm. So I'm thinking to myself, like, can I really spend this money? So I think the bank was like PNC or something back then. Mm-hmm. And I took the check, I deposited it. They told me that I can keep it. So that was my first $5,000. I'm like, damn, you know, what am I gonna do with this $5,000? Mm-hmm. And then my grandfather knew a young lady who had a property. It was a duplex, 32nd and Cecil P. Moore. And I took the $5,000 out the bank. That's all I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I think back then you only had to have $5 in to keep the account open. Mm-hmm. So I had the $5 in there. I took the $5,000 out. I gave it to the young lady, and I bought my first duplex at 32nd and Cecil B. Moore. Mm-hmm. And I packed up my stuff. Didn't have a lot, you know. I packed up my stuff. Moved into the property. The property had roaches, rats. The front door didn't lock properly. The windows didn't go up and down properly. But it was my home.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I loved it. I ate, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, iced tea with whatever, Clover. I think it was called Clover Farms back then.
Okay.
It was iced teas. I had those every night for dinner. I used my sofa to lock my door, put the sofa in front of the door. Man, I was, guess what though? I was living and I was loving it, man.
Yeah.
I was loving it. So that was my first step into real estate, and I had no idea what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I gave the lady the money. She gave me the paperwork. I signed it. Never went to settlement. Never talked to anybody. I just moved in, and I was happy.
Yeah, to be in college, I mean, you know, most college students, you're broke. Right, you figuring it
Super
out. it's books and ramen noodles.
That's it, man.
Right?
That's it.
You go from getting $5,000 in your hand, which for a college student is gold.
Yes.
To now, you now flip that into a whole property.
Yep.
Who knows about this on campus?
Oh man, nobody.
You
know,
oh,
you know what? I never even told anybody on campus because I thought I did something wrong.
Okay.
Because I used the money for something outside, and hopefully this don't come back and bite me for Temple. We good now. So, but I never knew. I thought that when I used the money that they were going to come back and ask for it, because it was a stipend.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that I had to utilize it for my books and for room and board. And I feel like if I would have told somebody, they would have asked for the money back, because I didn't have to pay the money back.
Mm.
It was free. It was $5,000 a grant.
If anybody from Temple is watching this is for entertainment purposes only. We cannot confirm or deny said sentiments that are being expressed here on the Marv Fresh Watch Show. You understand me?
For sure.
But I mean, listen, $5,000 well spent.
Yes. Yes.
So you get this property.
Yep.
You know, you're doing whatever you can to make ends meet. You got the sofa against the front door.
Yes.
You ramen noodles and Clover sandwiches and all different things going on. You then, now this is where the story gets interesting.
Yeah.
I'm reading more into it. You then get an inquiry from someone who wants to buy the property from you.
Yeah.
What happens there?
Yeah, man. I was still going to school, going back and forth. So now I got to share books because I spent the money to buy books, right?
Mm.
So I'm going to the library, and there's a gentleman who seen me going back and forth, and he approached me one day. And this gentleman, he was an entrepreneur, ran his own business, you know, his own pharmaceutical business, we will say. And he came to me and said, hey, you know, are you renting that property or you own it? I said, I own it. He said, I want to buy it.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay. He was like, I'm gonna give you $60,000.
Mm.
And I'm like, what? He's like, I'm gonna give you $60,000. I'm like, whatever. And then we kind of like talked a little bit. Then he walked away. I walked away.
Mm.
Couple weeks went by. He came back with a duffel bag of money, and he was like, I'm ready to buy the property. And I was like, what? He opened up the bag, gave it to me. I looked into it. He was like, it's $60,000. He had like a whole pamphlet of papers. We went inside. I signed off on it. After I finished signing and took the bag, I packed up everything that I had. I didn't move no furniture. I packed up all the clothes, packed up my books, and I went back to my parents' house.
Mm.
I didn't even count the money, Marv.
You didn't even get to make sure that it was all there.
I wasn't thinking like that. I just seen a duffel bag full of money, and I knew it was more money than I ever seen in my life. And I went to my parents' house and my mom was not having it. She was not having it. Yeah.
Okay. So you get this duffel bag of, first off, this is all happening in 1 year of college.
So this is like 92 now. So I started 91.
This sophomore year?
This is freshman going on to sophomore. Yep. I started my sophomore semester.
You might be one of the greatest freshmen to ever walk through the company. You went from getting $5K to getting a property. Yeah. So now you're getting $55K. First off, if you're a college kid with $55K in your hand,
yeah,
you feel like the richest man on earth. At that point, I'm thinking about what happens if that money, I'm dropping out. Like they ain't no event. I'm gonna figure it out after the fact. But yeah. I got $55K. I got what I came for. Temple, shout outs to you. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You get the $55K, mm-hmm. You go back to the house,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
What happens from there?
So, you know, I go back to the house. I tell my mom, you know, just like you said, I said, we rich. She's like, what are you talking about? You know, I showed her the money. She was like, where did you get this money from? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, the guy on CCB Moore. Mm-hmm. And she was like, get in the car. Mm. Took me right to the police station. Mm. Mom was not having it. Mm-hmm. I get to the police station. I'm explaining to them. We get into the detective car. Back then, I think it was like Crown Vicks or something. We drove back to the apartment. The gentleman was there. He had his team in here walking out, taking pictures. And the detective walked over. I sat in the car with my mom. The detective walked and talked to the guy. He came back with papers and was like, your son sold a property. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I'm looking at the documentation. My mom asked for the copy of the papers. We got it. We went back to the house, and we start celebrating, man. You know, I gave my mom some money, gave my sister some money. Still did not count the money.
Never counted the money.
Marv, I did another podcast, and the guy asked me, he was like, are you sure it was 60? I was like, you know what? I never took the money out the bag and counted it. I had the bag in my basement on the side, and I was just taking money out every time I wanted to use money.
Just like that.
Just like that, man. Just like that. So then I took some money out. I started looking at the paperwork, and I'm like, you know what? I'm reading. Now I'm starting to learn. Like, this is an agreement of sale. Well, back then it was called a HUD. I'm like, this is a HUD. And I'm looking, and I'm like, I see the $60,000 on there. I see my signature, but we never went to no title company. I never went to an attorney, nothing. I signed all the documents, and he took care of all the filings. Back then, you could go to City Hall in Philadelphia, and you can just file for a deed with your ID. Mm. And I believe that's what he did, because I didn't do anything but sign papers. It's crazy, man.
So now we have the 50. What we believe?
What we believe is 50.
What we believe is 55K.
Right? Yeah.
It might have been 54.5. We don't know. But it was a lot of money.
And for that gentleman out there, if you did not give me the whole 60, Just come talk to me. Let's make things right. You know what I mean? Cause, just because he might be sitting back like, oh man, I didn't give him 60.
Yeah,
so, you know,
yeah.
Let's make it right.
You get all this money. Yeah. You're taking care of some of your folks and beyond.
Yep.
So what happens from, is it now a situation where like, all right, I got this money. I'm gonna go back to school and finish with school. Is it like, okay, I just bought one property for $5K and made 55.
Yep.
Do I now buy another property? Like, is this the introduction to real estate, or is there still some steps in between?
Nope, there's still some steps in between. This was an introduction to independency. Mm. I never thought about being a real estate entrepreneur. I just knew I wanted to get out of my parents' house. Mm. And then what eventually happened is that when I moved back, I realized why I needed to get out of my parents' house, because my mom was strict. Mm-hmm. So you know, I'm pulling money out the bag. I'm spending. I did go back to school, because I had loans, and I switched my major. I was going to do criminal justice, and then I went back to school to do business management. Mm-hmm. I had to pick up a 9-to-5 job at that point because I started going through the money, and then I stumbled across another property. And this time, this property was, I think it was like $7,000, $8,000. It was a 4-unit on the 4400 block of Germantown Avenue. So I looked into the bag. I see I still had some more money. I think I had maybe like $15,000, $20,000 left. I grabbed $10,000 of that. I bought the 4-unit building. At that point, now I'm moving back out of my mom's house because I needed my independency. You know, I had to be in the house when the lights went out. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't be loud. You know, I used to be on the second floor, and I moved into the basement to get more independency. So when I left Cecil B. Moore, moved back home, had the money, realized that my mom was still strict. She didn't care that I gave her money. I still had to be in by 7:30 o'clock. I found the second, got my 9-to-5 job. I was a manager for a supermarket called Pathmark back years ago. So I was a manager for them, had the 9-to-5 job. I bought the quad. I moved into the quad. Now I'm out of my parents' house again. Mm. And now I'm in the quad. And now I'm realizing, now I did a real estate transaction, because this time I went to a title company. This time I had a realtor. Sort of, I guess, a realtor, I think back then he was a wholesaler. Mm-hmm. And I went to a title company. I went to an attorney. I signed documents. I paid. I got the keys, and I moved in the house, and I never went back after that. Now it's time to understand, what did I do? Mm-hmm. And that's when I started learning about real estate.
from what I read, you get this property.
Mm-hmm.
This is officially your introduction to real estate.
Yes, this is official.
But like the introduction to any business, you know, there are certain mistakes and things of that sort you make along the way.
Yep.
I read that there was a man that you met along the way by the name of George Anderson.
Yes. Yes.
Who essentially was kind of like your first mentor in this real estate space.
Yep.
What was that experience? What happened there? How did that help you to navigate the early stages of this journey?
Yeah. So I met George after Germantown Ave. So I got the ones at Germantown Ave. I lived in every unit in this quad. I didn't know nothing about contractors. I painted on my own. I did my own electric. You know, black electrical tape. I did everything on myself. So then I dealt with squatters. At this point, I went back to school, but then I went to real estate school and I became a realtor. Mm. And George was doing new construction. Mm. So when I met George, I was selling one of his he met me as a realtor at first. Mm. I was selling one of his new construction properties on Buess Avenue. He knocked the whole block down and rebuilt. I started getting a little arrogant then, I guess. You know, I was young, bought my first luxury car. I had a Jaguar back then.
How old are you at the time, if you don't mind?
I'm probably my early 20s.
Okay.
I'm still early 20s. I don't think I hit 25 yet.
Okay.
Still like 23, 24.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a Jaguar. And how we met is that I had the client that George was selling the property to. And George wanted to have some conversation with me. He's like, hey, you know, I want to talk to you about this deal. And I'm on my phone, you know, but back then it was the flip phones, you know, and he's knocking on my glass. He's like, hey, I want to talk to you. And I'm ignoring him, putting my finger up like, wait a minute. And then I rolled my window and I was like, can I help you? He's like, hey, my name is George. I'm the owner of the property. I want to talk to you about your client. I was like, you know, I don't talk to sellers.
Mm.
I only talk to my client. And I rolled the window back up and he looked at me. I looked at him and he walked away, right? And I almost ruined my career with that too, right?
Right.
So, long story short, I sold the property. I sold the property very fast for him. And as settlement, he pulled me to the side. Now, he had his realtor, the person that was working for him. He pulls me to the side and he says to me, he said, listen, he said, you got one thing that I don't like about you. And I was like, you don't even know me. He was like, you're very arrogant and cocky and that's going to ruin you. And I was like, what? He was like, all I wanted to do was have a conversation with you and you wouldn't have that conversation. And I was like, well, I'm loyal to who hired me.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't hire me. And he shook his head and said, okay. So we did the deal. I signed off. I think I got paid maybe like, you know, $4,000 off that deal.
Mm-hmm.
He reached out to me. He was like, can we go to lunch? And I was like, what? Like, you just insulted me at the settlement table in front of all these people.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled me, you know, I was like, all right, cool. So we went to lunch. He said, I want to hire you. I said, hire me to do what? He was like, I want you to sell the rest of my properties. And I was like, okay. So now I'm thinking that's more money for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay. Then he said, but under one condition, you keep that same attitude when other people try to talk to you. Because now you work for me. And I was just like, did he just own me? Just right? So then, you know, as time was going on, he started teaching me, grooming me, letting me know, like, drop the attitude. He was like, you're nobody special.
Mm-hmm.
Drop the attitude. And I'm just like, he was like, the faster you drop the attitude, the more money we're going to make.
Come on.
And I dropped that attitude, man. And he taught me how to do new construction. He taught me how to build LLCs.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me how to move properties out of my name into the LLCs. He became my unofficial mentor.
Yeah.
I reached out to him and asked him, I said, hey, you know, how much would you charge me to show me how to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, nothing. He was like, you're going to learn.
Mm.
You're definitely going to learn. And, you know, fast forward, he was my first mentor. And then today, I'm his mentor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm his mentor. So it's kind of like, you know, flipping and, It was amazing, man. He was impressed at the fact that I offered to pay him,
mm-hmm.
and he wouldn't take my money. He was like, I've made more money off of you than you can ever imagine.
Mm.
He taught me how to do new construction. I became his realtor, a private investor, a private financial investor,
mm-hmm.
His site manager, and his production manager on the projects that he was doing.
Mm.
And we flipped probably about another 15, 20 properties together.
What do you think he saw? I don't know if you ever asked him this, but it's like for some people, all it takes is that. Let me tell you something. I'm trying to talk to you. You rolling up on me.
Yeah.
Now you're talking to these. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
For sure.
But like he
for
kept sure. like, you know, from the car situation to the closing table, and then again, like re-inviting you out for lunch. Did he ever tell you like what it was about you in particular? I'm sure you're not the first realtor he's ever worked with at that
for
point
sure.
in time.
Yeah.
Did he ever tell you that?
Yeah, no, I actually asked the question. I asked him, I said, you know, what is it about me that made you interested in me? And he said, it's one thing that you did at the settlement table that I was totally impressed about. He said, because honestly, I didn't like you. And because he said I was too arrogant and cocky. And yeah. I was like, what was it? He said, we ran into a situation at the table where the buyer was walking away from the deal because we couldn't figure out the HVAC and we couldn't figure out what was going on with the property. You told everybody to calm down and you stepped out the room. You called an HVAC guy. The HVAC guy guaranteed us that he was going to go and certify the HVAC unit. You came back into the room and said, I'm going to have everything handled by the next 2 hours. The seller feel comfortable. I turned around and looked at the title company and said, we're going to put $3,000 up in escrow until this is resolved. I said, we're not going to hold anything up. I surrendered my commission and escrow just to get the deal done. And it blew him away. He was like, he's like, the fact that you were willing to walk away from the table with no money and put your money in escrow and this deal could have fell apart told me that you would do whatever it takes to win.
And winners want to work with other winners.
Winners want to work with winners, man. And then he straightened me out. And even to the day, Marv, like we're best of friends.
Wow. So we go from what a journey. So we go from 5K.
Yep.
The house on Cecil B. Moore.
Yep. 32nd. Yep.
Flip that to 60K.
Yeah, or maybe possibly.
Possibly. Perhaps.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. There's an asterisk next to the number.
Yeah, allegedly.
The 60K gets you mom, sis, cousin, auntie, uncle, and them. Yeah. Got a little bit left over. We buy another property, four units,
yep.
For 7K, I think.
7K, yep.
Which is crazy, by the way. Like, you're not 92. Finding that. And you're not finding that in 2025.
Nah, it's over.
It's not happening. You get this four unit.
Yep.
That's your intro. You meet George Anderson, and then from there you take off, and then that it's boots to ground. I'm all in on real estate.
No, really. So I was all in on learning real estate. So remember, I took myself back to real estate school. I was still going to Temple for business management. I was still working with George, and I still had a 9-to-5.
Still,
so, yes. I was still putting work, and I was still putting in 40 hours a week, and my Saturdays and Sundays was dedicated to George.
Yeah, wow.
And some people might say like, well, if you started making this money, why didn't you quit?
Yeah.
I couldn't. I was afraid. I was afraid. My job was offering me medical benefits. And my job was giving me that consistent weekly check. I was making $1,000 to $1,200 a week consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, George, I was making good money on the weekend with George, but that was, to me, that was called pipeline money. And with pipeline money is that when you go sell a real estate deal, you have something in the chambers, but you don't get paid until you go to settlement.
Yeah.
So that might take 30 to 45 days back then when we was flipping properties. So the money was there when it came. However, my weekly money, my monthly money was still dependent on that supermarket money. I was afraid. I didn't believe enough in myself to bet on me. So yes, I stayed at work. I still built up. Probably when I got to my 10th property is when I respectfully fired my boss.
why is it disrespectfully respectful?
Because you know what? When I quit my job, I quit because I had to battle cancer and I was on my deathbed. And when I came off of my deathbed, my supervisor at that time was at this time I'm a district manager. So I worked up the ranks in the supermarket business, became a district manager. Pathmark filed bankruptcy. They closed up. I went to Rite Aid Pharmacies. I was a district manager over there. I had prostate cancer. I beat prostate cancer. When I left off the table, my job asked me, when you coming back?
Wow.
And I was like, excuse me? They was like, yeah, your FMLA is running out and you have to make a decision. I said, my life was on the line. They was like, yeah, we understand that. How are you today? You feeling good? Great. Because you only got a few more weeks before you need to make a decision. So I'm like, man, like I just had the battle of my life.
Yeah.
I come back to work. No exaggeration. From the time that I've been out in surgery, from the time that I came back, all the work was piled up on my desk. My boss looked at me and said, how much time do you think it's going to take you to get through this? And I'm just like, my head is spinning. I called George. George is laughing at me. And I'm like, what's so funny? He was like, I had prostate cancer too. So now I'm like, is this how me and this guy's connected?
Yeah,
like we cancer brothers?
That's crazy.
Right? So then he was like, let me tell you something. He was like, you got one life to live. And if you continue to allow somebody else to control you, whoever can feed you can starve you. And I was just like, man, that was heavy. And he said to me, he was like, your job gave you a decision. You give them a decision. And I went in there. I tried to do it. I really did because I was still scared. And I picked up my 10th property around that time. And I'm coming to work, and now mind you, I had a company car, company credit card, company cell phone. I've threatened to quit multiple times before, and every time I threatened to quit, they gave me a raise on top of raise on top of raise. So I said to myself, I said, you know what? I'm gonna make them fire me. I'm gonna stop being productive. I'm gonna make them fire me. So I was doing goofy stuff, like just fire me, because I looked at it like, if you fire me, I'm gonna collect unemployment, and I'm gonna still get a percentage of my check. Plus, I'm gonna still get benefits. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't fire me. My boss literally looked me in my face and said, I know what you're doing. I'm not going to fire you. He was like, you're going to have to quit. And I had to talk with George, you know, talk with my mom, talk to my dad. And the reason why I say respectfully fired him, because they disrespected me. Mm-hmm. I had prostate cancer and they didn't give a damn.
Yeah.
And when I came back, they was like, when you going to get this work done? So I said, you know what? I let all the work pile up. I came in one day. I said, you know what? This ain't for me. He's like, what, you need some time off again? I mean, you know, you don't really have, you know, any more FMLA yet. Time left. I said, no, I'm done. Gave him their keys, gave him their cell phone, gave him their laptop. He was like, what do you mean you're done? I said, I'm done. He's like, you know this is going to go on your record? I said, you're going to need me before I need you. And I left. I walked out. And I planned it so well, because I took my car. I parked it around the corner from the job. Then I took a back then, it wasn't an Uber or Lyft back then. So I took a cab home. Then the next day, I drove the company car to work. So I gave them the keys. I walked out. They couldn't believe that I had already had my car parked ready to go. And at that point right there, you know, I cried. I'm gonna be a man about it.
Yeah,
cried all the way home. I drove
out of
my
fear?
Car. Yes. Because I looked, I felt like, did I make a mistake? I mean, you got to keep in mind, somebody put in 18 years of a company, and you just walk away because of frustration and anger. Mm-hmm. I'm driving home, and I'm crying, and I'm like, yo, get it together.
Yeah.
You know, about time I got to the house, you know, all the tears just dried up. And from that day, I worked my butt off in real estate. That 6 months to a year, I put my salary in my bank account that the job paid me. The following year, I doubled my salary in my bank account. And I'm not talking about gross. I'm talking about net.
Come on.
In my bank account, sitting.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was like, oh, yeah, you got this. You got this. And ever since then, man, I bet on me.
Man. So much to unpack there. The first question that comes to mind for me is, do you feel like it was... when you left, because you spent nearly two decades there, did you feel like it was too late or was just on time?
No, it was too late. I gave them too much time. And it's not, and I want people to understand this. Your job is your first financial silent partner. Mm-hmm. And you have to leverage that. You have to understand that where you work at is your stepping stone. Like, I don't care if you worked at McDonald's. I don't care if you worked at a fast food place. You're learning something. My job taught me how to read P&Ls. It taught me how to create SOPs. You know, it taught me a lot of different things that I'm currently doing today in my business.
Yeah.
It taught me, I took, you know, I mean, the company filed bankruptcy now, so I can tell y'all. So I took every HR book. I took every protocol that they had. I took all that stuff. I made copies of it. Mm-hmm. And I utilized those documents in my business that I'm doing right now today.
Come on.
So when you're working your 9-to-5, you can't keep saying every day, I hate my job. You got to wake up every day and see what I'm going to do about my job. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I gave them too much of my time, because I had what I needed to do my business.
Yeah.
I was just afraid because of the paycheck. Yeah. So I took to it. Now, it wasn't, I left late.
And even just listening to that, and it's the conversation that happens a lot with people who are aspiring entrepreneurs, where you have people that have 1 foot in the 9-to-5 life and 1 foot in the entrepreneurial life, and you every single time, if they're doing what they need to do, it gets to that point, that breaking point where you staying at your 9-to-5 is now holding your business back.
Yep.
Because you have the resources, you have the clientele, you have the experience, you have everything lined up for you to go all in on this.
Yeah.
But you've mentally handicapped yourself to where it's just like, well, this thing is guaranteed. When in actuality, it isn't. At any given moment, any of the execs from Pathmark can be like, yeah, we're done with you. Thank you for your time.
I saw it.
Right?
I seen it every day. Yep.
It happens all the time. And going to the quote that you mentioned, you know, when you give someone the power to feed you, you give someone, also give that same person the power to starve you. That's why becoming an entrepreneur. Obviously, entrepreneurship isn't for everyone, but becoming an investor,
yes,
finding where you could put your money and put a dollar and turn it into two is a non-negotiable for any and everybody.
Absolutely.
You understand? Yes. Because if you think that you work in that, I don't care if you work at a Fortune 500 company or if you're a cashier at Walgreens, like if you think that job is more, if you have more confidence in somebody else's ability to feed you, then you have confidence in your ability to feed yourself or to get the skill set needed to be able to feed yourself and take care of your family, there's something wrong up here.
Absolutely.
There's something wrong up here.
It's a blockage.
And definitely a blockage. Yep. So I appreciate you sharing that because I know that that's something that I do. I hear a lot when I'm speaking to aspiring entrepreneurs. I'm like, man, you're doing 10K, 20K in your business. Like, bro, it's time to go all in. It's just like, nah, man, well, what if this and what if that? It's like, what if you look up 30 years from now and, and realize that you've been in the same spot, living the same 6 months over and over and over and over again? And that's a reality for a lot of people.
So you know when it kicked in, though, Marv, to be transparent with you? It kicked in when I was giving my job 40, 50 hours a week and making $5,000 a month. And I gave myself 10 hours and made the same $5,000. At that point, it was like, oh, something wrong.
Look, if I'm doing my math correctly,
But
once again, like it first, I'm just happy you were able to get to that point because some people go to the grave and they never get there.
Nah, that's bad, man.
Never get there.
Yeah.
So you now go all in. Yep. You have your mentor. Yep. You're at property number 10.
Yep.
You have your foundation.
Yep.
You essentially double your salary. You're all in on real estate. Fast forward from then until now, you know, once again, you become a titan in the real estate space, more specifically in the Philadelphia area.
Yep.
And you said something at the top of the conversation that was great. You talked about people who are really boots to ground real estate and people who are intellectual property, real estate investors or influencers, if you will.
Yep.
Well, I'm sitting across from an actual real estate investor, and I want to be able to break this game down for people who are watching step by step, because as many wins as you've had, I'm sure you've taken some bumps, lumps, and bruises along
lessons.
The way.
A lot of lessons.
I want to break that down for the people here today.
Yeah. So one of the things you got to understand, getting into real estate is not as easy as one may make it believe on social media.
Come on.
You know? And what I mean by this is when you hear people say everybody can do this, you can do it. But you have to understand you are successful in what you understand. I understood real estate. I understood that I need to learn how to find properties, analyze deals, understand the price that I'm paying to buy in, understand what my ARV is going to be with this, which is after repair value, and then learn how to scale. So my very first real estate that I acquired after the apartment building, after the duplex, I had to do an FHA loan. That was the first time that I really, really did real estate from the beginning to the end and understanding it with paperwork. So I bought my first property FHA, 3.5% down, right? Now, this time, George is still yelling at me because George is teaching me how to put properties in my business name and I'm putting more properties in my personal name, which he was totally against. Right. But it's OK. It's OK to start off with if you put a property in your personal name, you just can't stay there. You got to learn how to pivot.
Yeah.
So for somebody getting started, I would say, hey, if you go FHA, understand what your purpose is. Don't buy the house that you want. Buy the house that you need. And the house that you need is a multifamily property. If anybody comes out the gate and buy a single family home, you know, house on the hill, white picket fence, you're not thinking like an investor. You're thinking because of lifestyle. And my purpose is to teach you, don't think lifestyle, let the investment create the lifestyle. Not you creating the lifestyle, right? So if you buy a multifamily property, if you go FHA, yes, you know, that might be the easiest entry level. Some people are against FHA. Some people say, well, why save up 3.5 and, you know, all these different things that FHA is going to put penalties and stuff on you. Yes, but everybody don't have $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to go right in to buy a DSCR property or use a hard money lender. So you got to get in where you fit in.
Yeah.
The whole purpose is get in the game.
Yeah.
You can't keep on, you can't stay on the sideline watching everybody score.
Yeah.
So you got to get in the game. I say get in the way to get in the best way that you can. Learn real estate. After you learn real estate, master real estate. Figure out what niche you want to be in. Do you want to be a wholesaler? Do you want to just be a fix and flipper? Do you want to be, you know, a landlord? And after you do that, learn the business of real estate. And that's what the most important part is. Everybody can teach you how to analyze a deal. Everybody can teach you how to find deals. Hell, you can find that on YouTube right now. You know, whether if it's my program, somebody else's program, the beginning of everybody's program is on YouTube. Everybody's, right? So get that initial part that you need on how to find a deal, how to analyze the deal. Then after that, invest in yourself with the business of real estate. Mm. And then you continue to scale. And the one thing that's the most important is that once you're going into real estate, find out what you love. If you don't like dealing with tenants, don't become a landlord. If you don't want to deal with, you know, wholesalers, and you don't mind doing construction, flip properties. Mm-hmm. If you don't like to do construction and you just want to be in and out and you don't want to deal with the whole drawn out process of selling a property, be a wholesaler. Mm-hmm. Just find your niche.
Yeah.
And then master it. Mm. That's how you become successful.
Right now, we're in the year 2025.
Yeah.
If I'm unpacking everything, if I'm breaking it down piece by piece, if someone wanted to take actionable steps to find their first property, because every real estate investor I've ever sat down with, they say the same thing. The hardest part is finding the deal. Once you find the deal, everything else after with reps and with right mentorship,
yeah.
You know, it's not easy, but it's not as hard as finding the deal. How are we finding deals in 2025 in this market with everything that's going on?
You know, a lot of investors do say it's so hard to find deals. I don't think that it is.
Okay, come on, let's talk about it.
Let's
talk about it.
You know why? I'm going to tell you why. The hardest part is that you don't believe in yourself.
Come on.
So your deal is standing right next to you. Your deal is right in front of you, right? When I talk and I teach about real estate, I ask the person, how many people know you're looking for a deal? When you wake up every day, I'm going to call my realtor or I'm going to look online. No. How many people do you encounter every day know that you're looking for a deal?
Yeah.
Right? You get up every day. You might go to the gym in the morning. Do the people at the gym know you're looking for a deal? When you go put gas in your car, do the person at the gas station know that you're looking for a deal? Mm-hmm. When your cell phone ring every day, everybody got more than 50 people in their phone. Mm-hmm. How many of those people know that you're looking for a deal?
Yeah.
Right? So you playing hide and seek with yourself. So it's not hard to find a real estate deal. Mm-hmm. The question is, do you really want to find a deal?
Yeah.
I tell people every day what I do. Every day. If I call an insurance company, if somebody call my phone, before you get off that phone, you're going to know that I'm a real estate investor. Mm-hmm. You're going to know where I buy it. You're mm-hmm. going to know if you have a deal you can send to me, or you're going to know what I'm looking for. The more you play hide and seek and you hide what your abilities are and what you're looking for, mm-hmm. that's why people think that it's hard. It's not hard to find a deal. Mm-hmm. I promise you, if you went outside right now and on these New York streets and you just stood on the corner and say, look, I'm looking for a real estate deal. Here's my zip code. What you got for me? Mm. I'm paying for referrals. You're going to find a deal today. Mm. I promise you. Somebody, I'm not going to say the deal is going to be a successful one, but somebody's going to say, you know what?
I got something for you.
Charlie looking to sell his house. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a deal. So when people say, oh, it's so hard. It's so hard to find a deal. No, it's not. You're not telling enough people. Mm. We do a lot of talking about nothing sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I always tell people when you look at your cell phone, you know, if you look at your phone should be categorized for deposits, withdrawals, mm-hmm. assets, and liabilities.
Yeah.
When that phone ring, you got to look at it and say, is this phone call a asset or is this phone call a liability?
Yeah.
And that's how you find your real estate deals. Just tell everybody.
Mm-hmm. So we're putting ourselves out there. We're shaking hands. We're kissing babies. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's posting 1,000 times on the gram every day, like looking for deals, whether it's cold call or whatever it may be, we're looking for it. Let's say we find a prospective deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like any business, numbers is the most important thing. If you don't know your numbers, you're not in business.
That's correct.
What does the process look like when we're trying to analyze a good deal from a bad deal? Because not all deals are created equal.
That's correct. So the first thing I always say, like I said before, you got to know what type of real estate you're doing, because the type of real estate is going to determine what that deal look like.
Yeah.
So if you know that you're going to flip a deal, I'm always looking at a deal and I'm doing a 65% rule.
Okay.
So if I see something, I say, okay, the ARV, I'll take 65% of the ARV. Whatever the 65% of that ARV is, I'm subtracting of what I think the construction is going to be if I'm going to flip it or if I'm going to hold it. Mm. At that point, I'm going to probably deduct probably another 3-4%, and that's my going in number. I'm going to make sure that asking price or my offer price, I should say, is going to be that number. So you got to know your numbers. If you're not sure of your numbers, the best thing I can tell you is you find somebody that's in the market that you're looking at and say, hey, listen, when the next time you get a deal, can we analyze it together? Mm-hmm. Can I walk through to see the numbers that you're doing? Because if you're just grabbing properties because somebody said Cleveland, Ohio is a cheaper point, or Indiana is a cheap point, it could be a cheap point, but you're gonna get burnt because you don't know numbers.
Mm.
Even though you in particular areas that are great to buy in, if you don't know your numbers and you don't know how to calculate the numbers, you're still going to get burnt.
Mm. Yeah.
You're still going to get burnt. So you got to know your ARV. You got to get off of Zillow. You got to get off of Redfin. Those numbers are numbers that are not accurate. Mm. But most investors rely on it. You got to find somebody. You got to find a realtor that's on the MLS. You got to find that you can get true numbers. Mm. Those numbers are not always true.
So when you actually said something interesting where you talked about you have certain investors that are looking in different markets, which perfectly segues to my next question.
Yep.
Because if we're looking for deals and we're crunching these numbers, I've sat down with a lot of investors that have mixed reviews when it comes to in-state versus out-of-state investing.
Yeah.
And some who are in favor of either side and some who are against certain sides. If we're speaking more so to newer investors, where do you stand on that discussion? If like I'm starting, you know, wet behind the ears, I'm green, like I'm new to the space.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm in New York. Everything here is expensive. Let me look over here in a Cleveland or in one of the other markets you talked about.
Yeah.
Where do you stand when it comes to that?
So for me, I'm not opposed of out-of-state investing, but I am opposed of out-of-state non-experience. Mm. So if you go to Cleveland, if you don't know Cleveland's markets, you got to start in your backyard. And I'm not saying start in your backyard where you have to buy something from New York, because New York is saturated and is expensive. Mm. But you can learn the skill sets. Mm-hmm. So when you get over to Cleveland, you know exactly what to do. Or when you get over to Indiana, you know exactly what to do. But you can't go to a market without a team. See, and this is where a lot of people lose it, because we're chasing real estate, but we're not chasing the business of real estate. Mm. We only chasing real estate. But when you know the business of real estate, you can take your real estate anywhere. You can go to Dubai and do real estate if you understand the business. Mm-hmm. So you got to understand the business of real estate. And I always say start in the market that's close to you. So New York is close to Jersey. Jersey is close to Philadelphia. I'm not catching a plane to Cleveland if I can go to one of those places, you know, one of those states that are closer to me and I can get my reps in. Mm. It may be harder for you to get reps in New York because of the price point of entry, but you got Jersey right on your backyard. You got Connecticut right on your backyard.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to one of those states and I'm going to start practicing, get my reps in. Then I'm going to take my show on the road. Mm. That's how you win.
Mm-hmm. One of the methods you talked about, and even me when I was studying real estate years ago, I know one of the more popular methods to get started was the Burr strategy.
Yeah.
Another strategy where I hear some mixed reviews about it. I'm not in the space, you're in the space, where some people are just like, hey, in 2025, Burr is dead. Like if you're doing Burr, you're gonna over leverage yourself. And other people are saying, like, well, I don't know about that. I think it's just about how you approach it.
Yeah.
What is in 2025, is the Burr method still an effective method for us to not only get started, but to build a real estate business?
So the people that say that certain methods are dead, if I can be very transparent, they don't know enough about real estate. Mm. And that's being very humble when I say that, because no method is dead. You have to have a strategy for every market. Mm. Now, I know I'm an OG. I've been in the game for a minute. However, there's a strategy for every market. Mm. You can do the Burr somewhere right now and be successful. Mm. You can do, you know, a Burr somewhere else and be unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. So it's not that the Burr method is dead. It's just that what is your strategy in the market that you're in? Your market is going to tell you the best strategy to utilize. Mm-hmm. For me in my market, I do buy, flip, hold. So I'm buying single family homes, I'm fixing them up, I'm flipping those single family homes, I'm taking the profit, I'm 1031 exchanging it, I'm dumping it in the IUL, pull it out the IUL, and then I'm buying the whole. And then I'm Burr. I'm going to do the Burr. Mm. So now most people who do the Burr, they're trying to do the Burr, maybe only put down, you know, 10%, 15%. Some people do the Burr, they put down 20, 30%. It doesn't matter, because you're putting down more money that you're better than the person who put down a 10%. You just have less leveraging that you're doing with your debt.
Yeah.
That's all. But if the cash flow makes sense, if the ARV makes sense, instead of pulling out 75% on the back end, maybe you pull out 60% on the back end, 50% on the back end. So now you're still cash flowing. So you have to figure out, how can I get into this property? How can I be successful, come out of the property and still cash flow? Mm-hmm. So every method, it's not that one method is better than the other. It's not the method, it's the market. Mm. You have to find the right market to execute.
You talked about the strategy you use now. Can we unpack that a little bit more? Because I'm not sure if I've ever heard that. So you buy a property, you flip it.
Yeah.
You then take the profit. And then I heard something about like a 1031 strategy and IUL.
Yep.
Break that down for me. I'm not sure if I've ever heard that before.
Sure. So what I do is buy, flip, hold. So I'm going to buy the property. I'm going to fix it up. I'm going to flip it. Mm-hmm. Now, when you flip a property, there's something called capital gain tax.
Yeah.
You're going to get hit with a capital gain tax. Mm-hmm. So in order to... evade, I guess, is a good word, of capital gain tax, you can move the money to a 1031 exchange, but you have to set it up before you make the acquisition. You move the money, Then you take a percentage of the money from the 1031 exchange and you can buy another property equal or higher value. So now before I do that, I'm going to take that money. I'm going to put it through my IUL, which is a life insurance policy. Then I'm going to take the money from out the IUL and buy the next property. If that makes sense. Now, it might be a little tricky for some people because you got to understand that's a process. You might not be able to do that on your very first deal, put in your reps, but that's my strategy.
Yeah.
You know, because I got in trouble with, you know, taxes when I wasn't paying taxes.
Oh, so okay, so talk a little bit about that because I've always heard that real estate is the king of, like, hey, if you want to lower your tax bill, investing in real estate is the way to go.
For
but
sure.
You talk about running into some tax trouble. I'm assuming that was in the earlier days.
Very early days, you know. So one of the earliest days when I sold the property for $60,000, even though that was $60,000 allegedly cash, right? Even though it was cash,
yeah.
When I did my taxes, I still had to claim it. It was profit.
Really?
You got to pay taxes on that.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, no, it's a sale. So
it's
yeah,
a sale.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when I do my system, buy, flip, hold, every time I flip that property, you have to pay taxes on that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Now at one point in time, I was just like, well, who going to know?
Hey, amen.
Right? So I'm just like, all right, so I just made 50, 60,000. Who going to know? Guess what? I got that knock at the door from the IRS.
Oh, absolutely.
We know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm trying to figure it out. Like, how did they know?
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about, you know, people telling on you and snitching, the title company snitched on me because they got to do a 1099.
Yeah.
They can't. The title company is not going to take ownership of your income because the title company is one who cuts you a check. So IRS came and like, listen, Mr. Cannon, you got amnesia, but we'll have to this money that you never claimed.
Right.
So, yes, you can have some good accountants that can use some things as a tax shelter. But when you flip in 2-3 properties a year, and you only buying, I mean, you flipping 2-3 properties a year, you're buying maybe one or two properties off of that flip, you still got one property that you didn't move the money yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got to pay taxes.
Hey.
So that's where things got a little complicated. That's when this is the reason why I'm so passionate about the business of real estate and not just real estate. Because people are going to get in trouble because nobody's teaching you this. Nobody's talking about it. They're just talking, oh, you can do the burr, or you can do the flip. What about them taxes? Right? So got in trouble there a little bit. Just got myself out. I think I'm down to my last $3,000.
Really?
You know what I mean? Yes. Since the 90s.
Hey.
I was
heavy. For all these years.
Yeah.
Fada.
Yes.
Really?
Because I was in so much debt with the IRS, I went on a payment plan.
Got you. Okay.
So now, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I got to talk to my accountant, but I believe I'm down to my last $3,000.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it's serious, man. That's why, you know, I talk about the business all the time. And y'all gonna get your money, all right? Don't be talking about that. Yo, we seen him on the podcast. We gotta get the
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, I got the last.
But
last
once again, this is the side that doesn't make it to Instagram.
For sure.
Like everyone shows the beautiful houses after they've been rehab, but nobody talks about the ugly behind the scenes and the nitty gritty, granular stuff that goes into not just. All right, well, I buy properties, but like running a successful real estate business.
You got to run it like a business, man, or you're going to lose the business. Real estate has a lot of lessons. I don't say losses because you can never lose in real estate. You only lose when you quit. As long as you don't quit, you're not going to lose.
What would you say is the most important loss you've taken that turned into a lesson in your real estate journey?
Not understanding rules and regulations in every state. Not understanding how to not cross mingle your money. That was the biggest lesson that I had to learn. A lot of people, you know, for years when COVID was here, everybody built LLCs and ran and got business funding and ran into this and ran into that. But people didn't know how to manage the business funding.
Yeah.
You know, you got 10 LLCs with 10 different LLC names and you pick up $50,000 to $100,000 per LLC. And then you transfer money from one thing to the next thing. And, you know, the biggest strategy is, you know, we take our personal debt and we transfer it over to the business debt to hide our utilization.
Yeah.
Right. But then you don't know how to manage the business debt.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're moving money all over the place. You cross mingled it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand how to set up your business the proper way. You know, my business is owned by a trust. The trust is owned by a holding company. The holding company is owned by LLC sales.
Mm.
Those LLC sales own properties up to about $2 to $3 million per LLC. Then I lock it.
Mm.
And then once I lock that LLC is now closed. then I go to the next LLC. So that means that I'm not moving my money around. I'm a ghost. Mm-hmm. Nothing is in my name. Mm-hmm. I'm a ghost.
As far as 123 Main Street, maybe it belongs to Calvin Cannon. Maybe it doesn't. We don't know.
But guess what? You know, one of the most important things that somebody told me was that you LLC your name. So even though it looks like Calvin Cannon, but you failed to mention that it's not a social, it's an EIN behind that name now. Mm-hmm. You become a ghost.
because this is good, because before you were talking about that was a lesson that your mentor told you where he was upset at you for putting properties in your personal name. Yep. You know, once again, real estate, this is a business where we're essentially building our portfolio. We have assets that we want to protect.
Yep.
A part of that is making sure, like, hey, I'm Marvin Francois. This may or may not potentially be my property, or maybe there's a trust somewhere in Wyoming that owns an LLC, that owns a such and such, that owns, I don't know. So how do we now, once we get a property, how do we now make sure that property is secure to where we're not putting ourselves in any personal liability?
Yeah. So I always say again, like sometimes when we teach, we complicate things and people are like, oh my God, I did this wrong. When I had these 10 properties in my name.
Yeah.
The biggest lesson was that I sold those properties to my LLC. Mm-hmm. I had to pay almost 4% transfer tax to do that. Mm-hmm. So that was a big chunk of money that I did. But I wanted to do it because I needed to become a ghost. If you're buying a property today and you're fresh, you know, you don't have any real estate, don't be afraid to put it in your name. Just understand what your end game is, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of people, when we talk about, oh, just put it in the LLC, put it in the LLC. Well, that particular person might not be in a financial stability to put it in the LLC, because LLC means that you either have to do a conventional loan, which is maybe 5% down or, you know, 10% down. You may not have that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac, they're not giving you businesses and LLCs. I mean, they're not giving you properties and LLCs.
Right.
So you can put your property in your name. What I will suggest is do not do backdoor deals with the lender. If you put the property in your name and then you turn around and change the deed from your name to your LLC and you haven't told the lender that you did that, you know, the lender can call that loan back. Mm. So if you're going to do this and you're really serious about building your business the proper way and you got a property, maybe two properties in your name, that's okay. Build it up, let them cash flow, and then the next couple properties, you can put them in LLCs. Mm. It's okay to have one or two in your name. Mm. After you build up your portfolio to a certain point, then you just go back and then you sell that property to your business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But just do it the right way.
This is really, really good. I want to talk a little bit about the financing aspect of real estate.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, we're not coming out of pocket. For some people, maybe they hustling and muscling and I'm going to work at my job for 10 years and save up and then I'm going to use that. Others, smart strategic investors, understand how to leverage good debt to invest in these assets.
Yep.
What are some of the different ways that we can finance real estate deals, finance the acquisition of these properties?
So if you have good credit, it is you know, you can get anything that you really want, right? Mm. But one of the things that I say is that, what's the difference between somebody who have an 850 credit score and somebody who have a 550? You know, and when I'm teaching my students this, they be like, well, you know, the 850 person, they can get whatever they want. They can get business funded. And I tell them the person with the 850 and the person with the 550 are the same people. Mm. Neither one of them are doing anything with their credit. Mm. The 550 can't do nothing and the 850 won't do nothing. Mm-hmm. You follow what I'm saying? So if you have good credit, you're in a great position to get funding. Mm-hmm. If you can get business funding, whether if it's business credit cards, business lines of credit, whatever it is, and you're really serious, you can take that debt. Now, some people say, well, why would you teach debt? This is good debt.
Yeah.
Because if I take a $50,000 credit card and I buy property, I never went into my pocket, my personal pocket. Now, when I buy that property, I have to have an end strategy. If the end strategy is to sell, I pay the credit card back off with the $50,000 from the profit, as long as I'm getting the profit. If the end strategy is to burr, to keep it as a rental, I'm going to cash out refi just enough to pay back the $50,000 credit card. Mm-hmm. So I never use my money. So you can use business credit to do it. What I caution people is, if you got good credit, don't use your personal credit to get the property. So some people might say, well, I got a personal credit card with $50,000, not business. Now I'm going to use my personal credit card, take the $50,000, I'm going to buy the property, but then the 30-day cycle, the $50,000 is now on my credit profile and my credit score dipped from 850 to 700. And now you're screaming and yelling like, oh my God, what's going on? My mentor misled me. Mm-hmm. No, You didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can't do 50K on your personal profile and then use it and then not put the money back. So you always want to use business. Mm. Do not use personal funding. Use the personal funding for emergencies.
Yeah.
But try to lean on the business. If you can't get business funding, again, we talked about these cell phones. Mm. Most times you can get into real estate with a minimum of about 10K. Mm-hmm. Right? You can do a wholesale deal. You can find a property, you know, a couple properties, put down $1,000 EMD, which is earnest money deposit, and flip the properties. But if you can get 10 people on your phone to give you $1,000, there is no loan.
Yeah.
This is 10 people coming together to do a real estate deal. Mm-hmm. But we don't talk like that. We don't tap into that, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of people got pride. You can do something called a subject to deal. Whereas though you can call the seller and be like, listen, you got a mortgage on this property. If I give you a little something to walk away, can I resume your mortgage? You can call the mortgage company, have them place you on the mortgage, start paying the mortgage. And I believe it or not, that particular seller interest rate might be 3-4%. Mm. You can still get into real estate, right? Mm. So this is what I mean when I say is multiple real estate strategies to get in. So if somebody says, hey, how much money do I need to get started? It's not the money. It's how much do you know? And how much are you willing to invest to get the information to get started? Wholesaling costs you nothing.
Come on. So what's funny is listening to all the different ways you talked about just creative financing and just getting started. The one thing you didn't mention, which I was actually surprised in, you didn't mention hard money lenders. And I'm curious to know why that is. Are you more a fan of leveraging business credit versus hard money, or is it kind of on a situational basis? Talk to me about that.
I love hard money.
Okay, break that down.
Yeah, so hard money, the only reason why I don't lean too much on it because hard money can hurt you.
How?
So a lot of people don't understand that when you go into a hard money lending situation, one, most times when you're doing a fix and flip, mm-hmm. you got 12 months. Max is 12 months. Some people give you 9 months. Mm-hmm. If you're not sure, if you are a new investor, hard money might not be for you. Because if you've never done a deal before, you don't have a mentor, you're buying your first property to fix it up, to put it on the market, or your first property to fix up and use as a rental, you don't even have a team to get through the construction. You got 12 months to get this done. Mm-hmm. They want their money, rain, sleet, hell, snow, right? Mm-hmm. So you got the hard money, interest rates is a little higher, you might not understand, and then you don't get done with the hard money. So you get to the end, now you're looking for an extension. Mm-hmm. You don't get the extension, the hard money foreclosed on you. Mm. You never get another hard money loan again. Mm. So hard money is good when you have the experience.
When
you say new investor, I try to pull them away from hard money. When you say seasoned investor, I say, let's go get that hard money. Mm. Because hard money is just like cash. But if you don't understand real estate, hard money will hurt you. Mm. Here's a quick example. People that get hard money, some lenders put inside of their packet that they get a percentage of your LLC if you foreclose on this property.
I didn't know that. This is my first time hearing this. Wow.
Deep, right?
That's crazy. Okay.
It's crazy. So this is why I say learn the business. Like most people who go to settlement, Marv, they don't even read the real estate documents. They just sign on the way. They got they have the notary on the other side of them. Sign here, sign here, sign here, sign here. You got any questions? Nope. Because they're super excited just to get the property. You know why? Because such and such was on social media inside their, you know, a Lambo, or such and such was coming out of a jet in an airplane, you know, telling you to go get real estate, or such and such told later for that. Mm-hmm. You got to learn the business. You got to get this right.
Yeah.
Once you get your brain right with it, then you okay. So people don't even understand what they're signing.
Yeah.
One of my mentees, I call him my leaders, he was at settlement. Mm. I got it on my phone right now. I'll show it to you right now. He texted me a document, and the document said that signing this piece of paper, you're giving us percentage of your LLC that you're acquiring a property. Imagine you got 5 properties in that LLC, and you're just getting this one funding from this one hard money lender. Mm-hmm. You miss a payment.
Ball game.
They foreclose on you.
Ball game.
They coming for you. They're coming for you. So new investors, I, if you don't understand real estate, hard money might not be for you right away, unless you got a mentor that can walk you through the process. Mm-hmm. Seasoned investors, hard money all day. Mm. I love hard money all day long.
I want to talk about, one thing you kept talking about is the business of real estate, the business. Yeah. I want to talk about another unsexy part of the real estate game that is also important, and I'm sure you've had your run-ins with, which is dealing with title.
Ooh. Yeah.
What, for those who don't know, for the new investor, what is title? Why is it so important to the real estate process?
Yeah. So title is basically, it's like your birth certificate and your birth history of the property. Mm-hmm. So a title report is a report that tells you all the individuals who may have owned that particular property. That's why it's called a chain of title. Really, title is short for chain of title. Mm. And title means taking one person ownership to the next person ownership, and you can be the new owner of the property. You should never, never, ever buy a property without title insurance. Mm. You always have to do a title search. The title company's job is to protect you from the point of purchase going backwards, right? People think that a title is from point of purchase moving forward. Mm. It's from title going backwards. They're protecting you that nothing else can interfere with that title. That's why it's something called a cloudy title. Because so many people transfer deeds without going through a title company, is multiple people names on the deed, the title comes in and clear that up. So you got to have title insurance. If my mama called me tomorrow and say, I got a property for you to buy, I'm saying, Mom, you got to go to NBA Abstract so we can do a title search. Mm-hmm. But I'm your mother. I know who you are.
I want to know who that property is.
That's right. Yeah. Because guess what, though? Did you know that when you're doing construction, and you don't pay a contractor, they can put a mechanical lien on your title.
Yep.
So now my mama got a roof 15 years ago, didn't pay the roofer. He put a mechanical lien. She didn't know about it. Mm. So now I'm going to go buy the property and I don't do title because this is my mom. Mm-hmm. Now I got a $15,000 mechanical lien that got to be paid before the title is clear. Title companies don't sell you properties if they can't clear the title.
Yeah.
So title insurance and titles are very, very important. If anybody's trying to sell you something without a title, now don't get me wrong, some cities and states use attorneys and not abstract companies, but they still pull title. So don't let that fool you. You got to get a title search. You got to get a title report.
We talked about acquisition. We talked about financing. I want to talk a bit about tenants.
Oh, man. Love them.
The first investor that's ever came on this platform and said that they love tenants.
I love them. You know why?
Talk to me.
So the reason why I'm probably the first is because a lot of investors that come on the platform probably don't understand tenants.
Okay.
So tenants are just like a client. Yeah. And one, we don't even call them tenants. We're going to call them residents.
Okay.
Because we got to treat them like family. Mm-hmm. Right? My avatar of a tenant is somebody who's 45 years or older. Mm-hmm. I'm running retirement homes. I'm your last stop. When you come rent a unit from us, I'm going to treat you well.
Okay.
I'm your last. You're going to walk in. You're going to get carried out.
Okay.
I promise you. And I'm treating you well. All of my units are newly renovated. I'm not a slumlord. Mm-hmm. I go in. I rip it all the way down to the guts. I rebuild them back up. I give them a luxury apartment, a luxury home for a fair market price. Mm-hmm. And the reason why people frown upon tenants, oh, they got all these horrible tenant stories. Is it the tenant or is it your process?
Come on.
Right? So when people say, the tenant tore my place up, who vetted that tenant? You can't just blame the tenant. Them days are over. Mm-hmm. So we got to stop with the non-taking accountability on the things that we do. Mm-hmm. What's your system? What's your process? Did you just, somebody told you about a tenant and you took that tenant and you just put them in? No, we got a process. I have a 2 to 3 day vetting process. Mm. My tenants go through a pre-application. They go see the apartment. They go through another application. They go through two interviews. Then we try to at least see the place that they're staying at, and or we take 48 hours to process the information that we have. Mm. You just can't call me up and be like, hey, I got my money. I want to move in. I'm not interested in your money. Mm. I'm interested in your longevity. Mm-hmm. Right? The shortest tenant that I've had and I have currently right now is probably, and when I say currently, I mean they got past the 2 year mark, is probably about a 6 year tenant. My longest tenant is about 18, 19 years.
Really?
Yes.
Hey.
I see what that hat say, rents do. We love tenants because we don't treat them as tenants. We treat them as residents. Holidays come around, I'm giving out gift cards. Every 90 days, I'm checking the apartment. I'm checking in. See, people get tenants and they chase the cash flow.
Yeah.
They're absentee landlords.
Yeah.
They set it, they forget it.
Yeah.
Me, I'm tapped in. This is my business. Mm-hmm. I'm calling the tenant. Hey, is everything all right? Is there anything that I can do for you? If a tenant is late with their rent, I don't call them up and say, when you going to pay me? I call them up and say, something happened. What can I do to help? Mm-hmm. So I love tenants, you know, and most of our tenants are on programs, right? I do veterans. I rent to homeless veterans. I rent to HUD-VASH veterans. I rent to Section 8. Not to say Section 8 is always the best, but it's not the worst. Mm-hmm. But regardless on who I rent to, I have an avatar. I stick to my avatar. I stick to my process. Mm-hmm. I love tennis.
So it's great. I'm happy that you said that because, mm-hmm. you know, when we talked about the let's call them the intellectual property investors, the mm-hmm. IPIs, that's what I'm going to call them, the IPIs.
Yeah, IPIs, I like that.
Yeah,
like
the intellectual property investors, right? The, yeah. the ebook investors, the course investors. Yeah. For a lot of aspiring real estate investors that are looking to get in the space,
yeah,
when they're consuming content mm-hmm. from the IPIs, yep. right? One of the words that they hear floating around a lot is passive. Get in real estate and it's passive. You make yeah. passive income. Yeah. I'm going to show you how to make money in your sleep in real estate and beyond. Yeah. And I think that's why you may have, and once again, I'm not in the space. I'm speaking from somebody who's from the outside looking in
yep.
that speaks with somebody who's in, on the inside looking out,
yep.
right?
Yep.
You have a culture now where it's like, or a space now where you have people coming in and thinking that, all right, cool, I'm going to get this property.
Yep.
I'm going to go ahead and put some people in there, mm-hmm. set it and forget it on the first of every month. I should just be able to check my phone, check my Cash App, whatever it may be.
Yep.
Money comes in, we do it all over again in the next 30 days.
Yep.
But what you're talking about is like real, being a real landlord, being a real yeah. like businessman to where it's like, no, you don't, these aren't just residents, these are people you have relationships with.
Absolutely.
So it's like, of course, they're here for 6, 7, 8, 10 plus years because your boots are ground. You're doing the work to where it's like, why yeah. would it, why would I go anywhere else?
For sure.
And a lot of people don't talk about that. So this is good.
Yeah. So again, we call our tenants residents and we call them guests mm-hmm. because we're going to treat them like a guest.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are listening to the influencers, right? And they talk about passive income. Nothing is passive before you get active. Right? Let me repeat that. Nothing is passive until you get active. So if you can't get active and get activated, you're not really getting no passive income. You're playing with it because it's going to stop. Right? You got to get active. And active means that you got to learn. Mm-hmm. You got to get in the field. You got to build your business. See, real estate is based on a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say this, money grows on trees when you plant seeds, right? And if you're not planting seeds inside of your business, and it don't got to be real estate, it can be any business. If you're not planting seeds, that means you're not building your foundation.
Yeah.
And eventually a weak foundation crumbles.
Yeah.
So when people are online and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I'm getting this passive income, I'm getting 10K this month, I'm getting 20K this month, I'm getting 30K this month. Listen, knock it off.
Mm.
Because a lot of y'all talking about gross. Mm. What are you netting? It's not about what you make, it's about what you keep. So if you're bringing in $10,000, but you got $9,500 in expenses, what? What are we really talking about, right? So yes, passive income can be created
yep.
in real estate,
yep.
but you got to get active to get it. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe in being active, if you don't believe in putting in the work, there's no such thing as passive income for you
because
you got to get activated.
Come on.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm curious to know, we talked a lot about like the business side of it. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, one of the things you talked about was battling with mindset when you were transitioning into yeah. this space. Once you got established and you started building your portfolio out, as you built your experience in this, has being in real estate ever forced you to confront something about yourself that didn't have anything to do with money, but had everything to do with just personal growth?
Yeah, man. That's a good one because when you're building your business, sometimes you forget about family.
Mm.
Sometimes you're so engulfed in what you're doing that the people that love you and care about you, you got to take a time out and tap out.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Building my business, I had to experience and understand that the business is great and chasing success, you're really never going to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to mentally understand that my success was my children,
mm.
building something for them and understanding that the joy that they can have to do whatever they want. They don't want for nothing, right?
Yeah.
I have to teach them, and I had to teach them the things that I was afraid of.
Mm.
Because if I can't teach them how to survive or the things that I was afraid of, they're going to run into the same situations that I was in.
Mm.
So when you building your business, you got to understand what's really your success. Because if you chasing money, you're never going to catch it,
mm.
right? They print money every day. They print money on demand. You're never going to catch the money that you're looking to get. So you got to understand what am I doing this for?
Yeah.
So once you mentally understand that, your success becomes closer to you and you're going to reach your goal because it's not monetary. You know what I'm saying? So I had to mentally change that because when you're young, you're like, man, I want to see $100,000 a month.
Yeah.
You can't manage $5,000 a month. How are you going to manage $100,000 a month? Right. Yeah. So sometimes we got to take a reality check where we got to turn off the TV. Right. I always say, you know, turn down the volume and turn up your value because your value is where it's at. It's where it's at. But yeah, mentally, I had to get myself together.
So for where you are now, you know, like you said, you're well over three decades in this space, still running. At this point, when you look back or when everyone else looks back and they're reflecting on your legacy, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for teaching people the right stuff. I want to be remembered for, you know, whatever someone asked of me, I did my best to give them all I had. You know, if you're loyal to me, I'm super loyal to you. If you're willing to put in the work, I'm willing to teach. And I want people to look at me and say that he was a genuine dude that would do whatever it took for you to be on top. I don't win by myself. When people be like, you know, you winning. No, I'm not. If you want to see my wins, go look at my mentees. Go look at my leaders. It's not about me no more. I've accomplished what I wanted. You know, like, you know, at one point, having over 100 doors, it's not about the doors. You know what I mean? It's more about how many success stories do you have? Yeah. How many people can really say, you know what I learned from this man? He really, really got me to the next level. That's my success.
Yeah.
How many guests and how many residents that you can go to and be like, hey, did you ever live in, you know, one of the CNC properties? Yeah, and it was wonderful. That's my success stories.
Yeah.
You know, changing people's lives. You know, it's not about me. I'm retired. I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm good.
As we start to close, I think not only to people that are looking to get into space, but I think to Calvin when he was in at that crossroads.
Yeah.
Where he knew he had to bet on himself. He knew he had to go all in on real estate. He was decades in this job and he just couldn't. It was like a tug of war between a limiting belief and a deep belief that he had in himself. And it was a back and forth until ultimately the rope broke and you finally took that leap and went all in. Yeah. And if that leap doesn't happen, we probably not sitting here having this conversation right now, right?
You're absolutely right about that.
And I share that because I know that there's at least one person watching this right now that's probably in a similar situation.
Yeah.
As we close, if you could speak to them and tell them something you wish you heard when you were at that point in your life that you think will give them that final push to go all in. It doesn't even have to be real estate. It could be whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
What would those words be?
I would tell you that, one, find out what you enjoy. Whether if it's real estate, whether if it's, you know, whatever it is, find out what you enjoy, learn it, find out somebody that's doing it that you can emulate and you can repeat the process because that's where your joy and your happiness is at. Stop feeling like you're trapped. Stop feeling like you have this ceiling over top of your head that you can't get to the next level. Stop putting everything on money. Oh, I don't got the money to do this. I don't have the money to do that. But you can go after the resources that are within your head to get you to the next level. The money gonna come.
Yeah.
The money gonna come. Find out what you enjoy. Find out who is doing it and doing it to a level that you respect, that you see, and you can touch it. Right? Because I can see and tell you all day that I'm a photographer, but if I never show you my pictures, do you really believe I can take pictures?
Right.
Right? So truth is proof.
Yeah.
Go find out exactly what that person is doing, touch it, see it, emulate it, and then elevate it.
Come on. Mr. Cannon, I appreciate you immensely for coming on here. This
appreciate you, man. Thanks for the honor.
A conversation that was long overdue. Whether you want to use your camera here or our camera there, let the people know where they can find you and let them know how they could get tapped and wrapped into whatever you have going on.
Absolutely. And you can find me on all social media platforms at Calvin Cannon Jr., CalvinCannonJr. Tap in with me. Shoot me a DM. Let me know that you watch this podcast and let me know something that you learned from this podcast because this was a heavy one.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it, man. All credit to you. All credit to you.
Both of us.
But yeah, man, I appreciate you. And listen, I appreciate each and every single one of y'all. And if you haven't already, what are you doing? Take a second, take a minute, take an hour out of your day right here, right now to go ahead, hit the like button, show this episode some love, and tell a friend to come back and watch it again. As always, I'm Marvin Francois. That's Calvin Cannon Jr. Y'all have been good. We've been great. This has been amazing. Thank you all, and God bless. Peace.